The Anger of Achilles. The BBC presents an epic for radio in three parts by Robert Graves. The Anger of Achilles, Part 2.
2,600 years ago, in a royal courtyard in Greece, an audience relaxing with wine cups at their elbows, sat waiting for one of Homer's storytelling sons.
Keep back, slaves! Back, children! Make way again for the honored bard, servant of the god Apollo. Let him enter the king's presence unmolested.
Welcome again, Phemias, son of glorious Homer. We are here assembled, as you see, in joyful hope of further entertainment. But first, noble son of Homer, is your wine cup filled?
To the brim, I thank you, shepherd of your people.
Sing, Phemias, sing!
Sing the anger of Achilles!
Pray silence, lords, ladies, freemen, children, slaves!
Sing.
Honor Apollo and his noble servant, the bard Phemias, as he sings to the god's turtle-shell lyre.
Again I tell, my lord king, a tale from the 10th year of the long Trojan War, when 600 years ago, Prince Paris of Troy, aided by the love goddess Aphrodite, stole Menelaus's wife, Queen Helen of Sparta, and Priam, king of Troy, refused to send her back. I tell again of young Prince Achilles, who had brought his Myrmidons to fight the Trojans, and now at last had quarreled with the high king Agamemnon of Mycenae, the Greek commander-in-chief. I sang before of the anger of Achilles and told how it was aroused. Tonight, I tell of its cruel implacability. There was a rush to arms in Troy, and soon the Trojan infantry and chariotry poured out through the gates, yelling their war cries, and onto the Scamandrian plain. Great clouds of dust arose from the plain as the Trojan forces advanced at the double against the silent, well-disciplined Greeks. Before battle could be joined, however, Prince Paris of Troy darted between the two armies. He wore a panther-skin mantle and carried a bow, a sword, and two bronze-headed spears.
I, Paris, son of Priam, beloved of the goddess Aphrodite, who brought Queen Helen to my bed, I, Paris, challenge any nobleman of Greece to meet me now in single combat.
Your challenge is accepted, evil Paris. Here come I, Menelaus, king of Sparta. You stole Helen from me, my queen. May Father Zeus grant that I strike you dead. What is this? Can it be that you think better of your challenge, coward? Do you run for shelter behind your comrade's shield?
Paris, you are needed, Paris. It is your brother, Hector, the commander-in-chief, who summons you.
Here I am, Hector.
Ah, you handsome, deceitful woman, mad good for nothing. I wish you had never been born or had died too young to disgrace us. So you dared not face Menelaus and find out what sort of a husband you had wronged.
I had my reasons.
That was wise, brother Paris. Neither your lyre playing nor your pretty curls nor your exquisite profile will avail you much against his sharp spear and sword.
Sharp words, dear brother Hector, coming from you. They cut like the axe of a shipwright. He shapes a beam, and every stroke tells. But why condemn Aphrodite's loving kindness to me?
Aphrodite.
Should I be ungrateful for what she has so freely given?
Too freely.
Very well. If you forbid me to withdraw my challenge, then make your men sit down, ask the Greeks to follow their example, and watch me fight the unhappy Menelaus.
Ah, no.
Let our stakes be Helen and her fortune, the survivor to take both.
If you are true to your word, brother, well and good. Ah, a truce, a truce. Greeks and Trojans, disengage! Back, back, a truce! King Agamemnon, I appeal to you, a truce!
Hold your fire, comrades. Prince Hector of Troy has something to announce. He's pressing the men back with his spear shaft. Back, Greeks, back yourselves.
the High King, Agamemnon. Accept a truce.
Trojans and Greeks, here is a message from my brother, Prince Paris of Troy. He invites you to ground arms, sit down and watch while King Menelaus and himself fight it out fairly between our lines. The stakes are Helen and her fortune. The survivor will take both.
So, the plan is single combat. What say you to that, Brother Menelaus?
As the chief sufferer from Prince Paris's treachery, I hope that the end of this hard-fought war is at last in sight. Very well. Whichever of us two may be doomed, he must die, and let the armies disengage without further fighting. But first, victims are needed. A white lamb for the sun, a black lamb for earth, and for Father Zeus, a ram. And King Priam of Troy must be summoned to witness this truce. We cannot trust his sons to act on his behalf.
So while the noblemen of both armies dismounted from their chariots, Hector of Troy sent two heralds scurrying across the plain to summon King Priam and fetch the sacrificial lambs. And when King Priam presently drove up in his chariot, Agamemnon treated him ceremoniously. A solemn sacrifice was performed, and oaths consecrated with the victim's blood and with libations of wine poured by all the royal witnesses. Hear how Agamemnon announced it.
The terms are as follows. If Prince Paris of Troy kills my brother King Menelaus of Sparta, he is at liberty to keep Queen Helen with her entire fortune, and we will sail peacefully home. If, contrariwise, King Menelaus of Sparta kills Prince Paris of Troy, you Trojans must surrender Queen Helen with her entire fortune, as well as paying me an indemnity so large that it will become proverbial. Item. Should King Priam and his sons fail to pay me the aforesaid indemnity, I shall regard this truce as void and fight the war to a finish.
Hector and Odysseus, having marked out the field of combat, dropped two pebbles into a bronze helmet, one for Paris, one for Menelaus, as lots to decide who should throw the first spear. Hector, keeping his head averted to ensure fair play, shook the helmet. Paris's pebble leapt out at once. Paris prepared for the fight, putting on a pair of greaves fastened at the ankles with silver clasps and borrowing an inlaid corselet from one of his brothers. Across this, he stretched a baldric from which hung the scabbard of his silver-studded sword. A menacing horsehair crest embellished his helmet. Then he chose a large, strong shield and a tough spear of convenient weight. When Menelaus had also armed himself, a deep hush fell on both armies as the opponents strode forward simultaneously and stood brandishing their spears. Paris made the first cast.
Have at you, cuckold!
His spear struck Menelaus's round shield, but the point failed to penetrate the thick layers of bull's hide. Now came Menelaus's turn.
Almighty Zeus, grant me vengeance!
His spear tore through Paris's shield. Paris jerked aside, and though his breastplate and tunic were pierced, took no hurt. Menelaus pressed the advantage, sprang forward, caught hold of Paris's helmet crest, and swung him bodily around. Half strangled by the embroidered chin strap, Paris could not help being dragged off towards the Greek line. Here the combat would have ended in Menelaus' triumph and deathless glory, but...
What happened?
What happened?
Did you see?
Chin strap broke.
Menelaus is holding an empty helmet.
Where's Paris?
Did anyone see him go?
Vanished.
Vanished?
Behind the battlements on the walls of Troy sit a group of aged Trojan counselors. Though too old to fight, they are admirable talkers. Withered, persistent, and shrill as the cicadas that sing throughout a summer day, perched on the branches of forest trees. As Helen approaches, these greybeards mutter earnestly among themselves.
How entrancing she is.
Like an immortal goddess.
Indeed, I cannot blame Trojans and Greeks for battling over her so bitterly.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
But false.
Her presence here endangers us all.
Oh, Helen.
Helen of Troy.
The goddess Aphrodite, disguised as an aged Spartan slave woman, tugs at Helen's perfumed robe.
My Lady Helen, Prince Paris sent me to fetch you. He is at home, stretched on his inlaid bed upstairs, wearing a fine nightshirt and as handsome as ever. Ah, Aphrodite, I see through your mortal disguise. How can you deceive me so?
Deceive you?
Now that Menelaus has killed Paris and I must go back to Sparta, are you trying to lure me elsewhere? Have you taken a fancy to some new prince whom you want to reward with my accursed love, as you rewarded Paris of Troy? Why should I ornament another lover's couch? These Trojan women would rightly curse me if they heard of it, and I have trouble enough from them already.
You dare provoke my anger, hussy, and I will desert you. But by my timely help, Paris has escaped from the field of battle. Now will you come?
Forgive me, Aphrodite, divine protectress. Lead on to my house.
Greetings, dearest Helen.
So there you are, Paris, lying there on that bed. What a disgraceful sight. I almost wish my former husband had put you out of your misery.
Eh?
You used to boast yourself his match as a fighter. Very well, get up from that bed. Go back and challenge him once more.
Stop being cruel, Helen. This afternoon the goddess Athene helped Menelaus to win. Some other day I may be victorious. Who knows? You and I also have a goddess to assist us.
Dearest Paris.
Oh, darling, come and let us make love. I never felt so overpowering a passion for you since we eloped from Sparta. Oh, that first night together on the island of Granae. This is going to be no less wonderful. Come.
I thank you, gracious Aphrodite. Forgive me again.
Oh, Helen, my Helen.
Meanwhile, Menelaus went prowling through the enemy ranks like a wild beast seeking the prey that has escaped it. But Paris was not to be found. And at last, Agamemnon cried out,
Trojans, Dardanians, and you other Trojan allies, pray lend me your attention. I declare my brother Menelaus victor of this single combat, and I demand the immediate surrender of Queen Helen and her entire fortune. Furthermore, I demand an indemnity so large that it will become proverbial.
King Priam, who had returned to his city of Troy, would have felt obliged to make good so solemn an oath. But the goddesses Hera and Athene were still bent on the destruction of Troy. As a desperate expedient, Athene decided to break the truce and flew down to the battlefield disguised as a Trojan. Thus she appeared before King Pandarus, a Trojan ally.
Take my advice, Pandarus, and shoot King Menelaus. Think of the fame. Think of Paris's gratitude. If your arrow flies straight, he can be counted upon to pay you handsomely. Quick, pick Menelaus off while you still may, and vow to wolfish Apollo, god of archers, that once safe home at Delia, you will sacrifice on his altar.
Like a fool, King Pandarus listened to Pallas Athene. He drew his polished oryx horn bow from its case, a magnificent weapon, 8 foot long with golden tips. Lowering this to the ground, he strung it with bull's sinew, but did so behind a screen of shields. Next, he opened his quiver, fitted a brand new shaft to the bowstring, bent the bow back to his chest until the iron barbs were level with his bow hand. An instant later, he let fly, horn twanged, string whined, arrow hurtled. But Athene posted herself in front of Menelaus, and like a loving mother brushing a fly from her sleeping child, guided the arrow to where it would do least damage, in his flank, nipping the skin.
Ah! Ah!
An arrow has ripped my side. Treachery! Revenge me, Agamemnon!
Alas, my poor brother. I fear this truce has proved your ruin. The Trojans have broken the armistice and transfixed you with that arrow.
Transfixed?
Ah, now I am more than ever convinced the Troy's doom is sealed in
this arrow.
Yet I should be most unhappy, brother, if you succumb to that arrow. Your death by removing the cause of this war might set my men clamoring for home. And how ashamed I should be to find myself back in Mycenae, having allowed the Trojans to make good their old boast of keeping Helen.
This arrow is...
Your bones, my brother, would rot in Trojan soil, and the proud Trojans capering on your tomb would scoff and say, we pray the gods that Agamemnon has sailed away empty-handed, and noble Menelaus lies here beneath our feet, his mission unaccomplished.
Oh.
Rather let the earth swallow me alive than that the Trojans should say such things.
Then do not say such things yourself, brother.
What?
This arrow stings, but it has not wounded me in any vital spot, so why spread alarm and despondency?
Oh, indeed, Brother Menelaus, I hope that you are right.
Oh.
But pray send for a surgeon at once to examine your wound and apply a healing poultice. Where is Talthybius, my noble herald? Talthybius, send for the surgeon Machaon, son of Asclepius. Inform him with my compliments that some Trojan has unfortunately succeeded in wounding my brother King Menelaus. Will he please attend to him at once? And now, Greeks, fight with redoubled fury!
Thus the goddesses Hera and Athene had their way, and battle was resumed. The armies met with a clatter of bronze, fighting at spear's length or shield boss to shield boss. A tremendous din arose, cries of agony, shouts of exultation, as men killed or were killed, and blood reddened the earth. But the goddess Athene again intervened, and mounting the chariot of Diomedes, he was the young, impetuous king of Argos, she helped him slaughter Trojans by the score. Why, it was the goddess Athene who guided one javelin cast of Diomedes that struck King Pandarus between nose and eye, penetrated his upper jaw, sliced his tongue, and emerged near the crook of his jawbone. Pandarus fell heavily to earth, and his horses jumped sideways in fright. Then Diomedes would have killed the renowned Aeneas of Troy, one day to found the city of Rome, but that his mother, Aphrodite, dived down to his rescue from Olympus. Many other Greek champions likewise distinguished themselves, the goddess Athene's presence everywhere giving the Greeks the upper hand. Even the aged King Nestor, though too old to fight, drove about the battlefield in a chariot, urging his comrades forward.
Come, my lads and brothers in arms, press on the rout! Kill as many Trojans as you can! Why compete with one another in collecting loads of booty? Wait until all is done, then strip the corpses at your leisure!
Meanwhile, the bright-helmed Hector tried to rally his disorganized Trojans, but he saw that only an immediate, handsome sacrifice to Athene could avert further disaster. He hurried towards Troy to arrange this, and as he went, his enormous black bull's hide shield drummed against his powerful neck and ankles. He pushed through crowds of anxious women at the western gate of Troy, his mother Hecuba among them.
Oh, God, the white prince!
Tell me, Hector, I beseech you.
Leave me, ladies! Leave me alone! Pray to the gods for victory! Pray to the gods!
Hector, my dear son, why have you left the battlefield? To invoke Father Zeus from our citadel here in Troy? Wait then, while I fetch you wine, for a libation to Zeus, and for your own refreshment.
Thank you, mother, but I want no wine now. Please assemble all the old noble women of Troy in Pallas Athene's temple.
Yes, my son.
Then unlock the holy inner shrine. Cover the divine image with your grandest robe, and vow her a sacrifice of 12 untried oxen if she will restrain Diomedes' terrible spear. And save our city, its women, and its little children.
Yes.
Do so. While I persuade my cowardly brother Paris to resume the battle, all that Mother Earth would open and swallow him.
Oh, deal gently with the poor lad, Hector.
Aphrodite's gift to him has brought nothing but grief upon our noble father Priam and all Troy. But first, pray to the gods. Pray, Mother, to all the gods.
Athene. Guard this citadel. Athene, fair beyond compare, I pray you. Guard it well. Snap Diomedes' lance. Let fate cause him to fall in sight of all dead at our western gate. And listen well. For here and now, a sacrifice of no small price, most reverently we vow. Pallas Athene. 12 oxen, which have never yet suffered the goad, to you are owed. Think not we shall forget. But when Troy's soldiers call on you, guard well their lives. Guard well their wives. Their tiny children, too. Pallas Athene.
Athene, however, stopped her ears against this prayer. Hector hurried to Paris's house and burst into the bedroom. But paused, abashed, when he found Helen among her women as they embroidered linen cloth, while Paris sat nearby.
Oh, excuse me, Helen, may I speak to my brother? Paris, you seem to bear some sort of grudge against Troy.
Why, Hector?
Is it not because of you that our people are dying in defense of these walls? You must have heard their shouts and screams, yet how often you belittle the courage of your brothers.
Sharp words again, Hector. But I bear no grudge against Troy. The truth is that after my duel, I felt a little sad. I wanted to have a good cry on the chair in this bedroom. Helen has just suggested that I should fight again, and I am taking her advice.
Her advice?
One never knows, does one, who will win the next round. Wait while I rearm, or else go ahead. I will soon overtake you. Ah, Helen, go and make my brother welcome.
Oh, Hector, my brother-in-law. If a creature like myself may venture to claim kinship with you...
Oh, Helen!
How I wish that a tempest had burst over me at birth and carried me off to my destruction.
No.
Or at least that I had eloped with a better man than Paris. Someone who would not make light of the contempt he deserves. Paris is, I fear, incorrigibly shameless. And all your troubles have been caused by my being a bitch and his being rotten to the core.
Oh, my dear Helen.
Father's use, of course, will punish us both in the end. And long after we are dead, bards will compose derisive songs about our failings. But do sit down, Hector, and rest a while.
I may not, dear Helen. Oh. I must hurry back. The troops need me. Make Paris hurry, too, and see whether he can overtake me this side of the gate.
I will, Hector. Now, Paris!
Yes, Helen?
Paris, for my sake.
As Hector was returning to the battlefield, he met his wife, Andromache, and a nursemaid, carrying their 3-year-old son, Scamandrius.
Andromache, my love.
Oh, dearest husband, this reckless courage will be your undoing. Have pity on Scamandrius and me. Once you are gone out to the battlefield again, nothing but sorrow awaits us. Be merciful. Stay here in Troy with me and our darling son.
I cannot, as you know well, Andromache. Though forebodings weigh heavily in my heart. And surely you would not have me betray my honor. I have always fought in the vanguard for my father's glory and my own. Oh, but dearest Andromache, though our holy city of Troy is fated soon to fall, and though every man in Troy must die around King Priam, their doom troubles me little when I brood on the agony that awaits you, led weeping into slavery by some mail-clad conqueror. May I lie buried deep in earth by then.
deaf to the sound of your heartbroken shrieks.
Hector stretched out his hand towards little Scamandrius, who shrank away, hugging his pretty nursemaid. The bronze armor terrified him, and so did the tall horsehair plume that nodded fiercely from his father's helmet. Andromache smiled amid her tears. Hector smiled too. He removed his helmet, laid it shining on the ground, took Scamandrius in his arms, kissing and dandling him, and whispered a prayer to Zeus for his safety.
O Zeus, sole ruler of the sky, and all you other gods on high, grant that my infant son may live to gather fame superlative. Reserve, I beg you, for this boy a bold, strong heart to govern Troy, and shine as once his father shone. May this whole city muse upon his feats of valor in a war to cheer his mother's heart once more. Then let all say, if say they can, his father was the lesser man. Dearest Andromache.
Hector.
I hand you back our son.
Hector. Hector, my beloved.
Oh, dearest wife, restrain your grief. No Greek will kill me, unless the gods permit him. And then who can evade his fate? Go home now. Attend to your spinning and weaving. Keep your women hard at work. War is a man's task, but especially mine as commander-in-chief. Leave that to me.
Hector picked up the plumed helmet, set it on his head again, and made quickly for the gate. As Andromache climbed the hill that led to the citadel, glancing back often, great tears rolled down her cheeks. Then Paris came running past and overtook Hector. Oh,
I am sorry for delaying so busy a man as you. I should have come at once.
Nobody underrates your fighting prowess, Paris, my brother.
I hope not.
But it is painful to hear our people complain of the disasters that your willful irresponsibility has brought on us all.
They'll have no more cause.
Well, we shall put everything right one day, perhaps. If Zeus ever lets us chase the Greeks into the sea...
The exhausted Trojans, still fending off Greek attacks, rallied nobly once the two brothers came rushing back to their aid. The armies met again with a clash of bronze, and then after fearful slaughter, almighty Zeus thundered from Mount Ida as a sign that the Trojans would be victorious that day. Soon they had driven the Greeks behind the fosse and rampart that guarded their naval camp. At the palace window of Olympus, white-armed Hera, mother of the gods, turned to her stepdaughter, the goddess Athene.
Daughter of Zeus, can we allow any more of this? Why not intervene, if only for a last time? Our poor Greeks are on the point of massacre, and all because nobody dares face the battle rage of one single man, Hector of Troy. The terrible casualties he has inflicted.
Indeed, Queen Hera, nothing would please me more than to watch his death agony. But my perverse, stubborn, evil-tempered father, Zeus, continually upsets our plans. Now he is granting the silver-footed sea goddess Thetis whatever she asks, just because she kissed his knees and caressed his beard and begged him to take pity on her son Achilles and help the Trojans. Tomorrow, perhaps, Zeus will call me his bright-eyed darling again, but not today. Because Achilles is nursing his anger against the Greeks, Father Zeus will help the Trojans. Quick, Hera, harness your horses while I arm myself for battle. Then watch Hector's face when we come charging on the scene. Trojan as well as Greek corpses will soon be dogs and ravens by that accursed shore.
Steady, you unruly bears! Steady!
Almighty Zeus, however, from his seat on Mount Ida, saw what was afoot, and indignantly summoned Iris, the golden-winged.
Iris, messenger of the gods, fly as fast as you can. Intercept those two goddesses and warn them to keep out of this battle. For I do solemnly affirm, and so the thing shall be, that those who dare adventure there must take good heed of me, lest I should huff their horses' legs and crush their chariot wheels, and roughly from the golden rail toss them head over heels. 10 long years will not cure the wound torn by my thunderbolt. And bright Athene learned too late the rashness of revolt. With Hera, I am not so wroth. It is her doom indeed to break or thwart with wifely art all laws by Zeus decreed.
Iris delivered Father Zeus's message, whereupon Hera and Athene turned their divine chariot about and drove fuming back to Olympus. That night, Hector of Troy, left in possession of the battlefield, bivouacked his men close to the Greek ramparts, guarding their fleet. Within the Greek camp, utter confusion reigned. Agamemnon, dazed by grief, convened a hurried council of war.
Comrades, Father Zeus must have cursed me with blindness. I never suspected so cruel a trick. Despite his firm promise that I should not quit these shores before sacking Troy, he now expects me to sail home dishonored by immense losses. If such is Zeus's pleasure, what can we do? Venerable Nestor, your advice was always voted the best in the old days. Give us more of it now.
Most noble son of Atreus, my lord Agamemnon the High King, I do not propose to speak at length on an empty stomach. Since night has fallen, let supper be prepared and a banquet spread for us counselors. This is at once the High King's duty and privilege. And your huts are well stocked with wine ferried across from Thrace.
Then let supper be prepared. But meanwhile, give me your counsel, venerable Nestor. To be ringed round by the enemy's campfires is no laughing matter. The fate of our expedition will be decided tonight.
My lord Agamemnon, I shall try to be as helpful as possible. And I doubt whether anyone here will speak wiser words than mine.
Indeed.
This thought has been floating in my head ever since the day when you sent your heralds to take the slave girl Briseis from Achilles' hut. Not only without our approval, but against my express warning.
Yes.
In short, you were a fool to let your proud heart betray you into dishonoring a hero whom the gods themselves honored. For you robbed Achilles of his prize and still retain her. Now he sulks in his hut, depriving us of his myrmidons. Yet it is not too late to think how we may win his renewed support by appeasing him with honeyed words and friendly gifts.
Venerable Nestor, your animadversions are well deserved. I do not deny having acted like a fool. I repent of my hasty passion and shall make amends in the form of a stupendous indemnity herewith offered to Prince Achilles. On the understanding that he yields to my entreaty and forgets his grudge.
We must also, of course, send acceptable delegates to Achilles' hut. See here. If I choose them myself, will anyone raise objections?
No.
First, I name the venerable Phoenix, Achilles' own tutor.
Graciousness.
Second, great Ajax.
Aye.
Third, King Odysseus.
My lord.
And two noble heralds shall accompany them. How's that?
Sir, yes, sir.
Now, pray, my lord, call for water that we may wash our hands before we eat of your beef and drink of your wine.
No, dear Patroclus, the tune goes thus.
Twa-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Who's there? Open the door, if you please, Patroclus.
Yes, my lord.
Well met, my lords. How glad I am to see your faces again. I've missed you all sorely, despite my anger. Greetings, Ajax.
Greetings.
Greetings, Odysseus.
Achilles.
Greetings, Phoenix, my beloved old tutor.
Greetings, noble Helms.
Here are settles and bales of purple carpet to sit upon. Take your ease, my lords. Patroclus, fetch a larger bowl, mix stronger drink, and bring 5 more cups for these friends of ours. A health, my lords. Health to you, Odysseus.
So they sat down and ate and drank heartily. And Achilles feasted them plentifully on beef, mutton, and pork roasted over the fire. Then Ajax nodded to Phoenix, who was to speak. Odysseus, however, intercepted the nod and spoke first.
Your health, Achilles. We can always be sure of a splendid feast not only at Agamemnon's hut, but also, it seems, in yours. But where to find good food and drink is by no means our sole preoccupation at the moment. On the contrary, great Achilles, after our serious reverse, we are doubtful whether, unless you step into the breach, we shall contrive to save the fleet. The Trojans and their allies are, as you know, bivouacking tonight behind a long line of fires just outside our defenses. Hector of Troy made havoc of our army today. He swears to assault the camp at dawn and burn our fleet. Noble Achilles, this is your last chance to save us wretched Greeks from massacre. Fail us, and you will always regret it.
Never.
My friend, do pray let your anger cool. The High King Agamemnon is anxious to conciliate you with gifts that match your achievements. Listen while I enumerate the treasure. 7 new 3-legged bronze pebbles, 10 talents of gold, 20 shiny copper cauldrons,
horses,
6 pairs of race-winning chariot horses.
Pray, remember this.
7 craftswomen, marvelously beautiful girls, chosen by himself from the booty you won at Lesbos. Also the pretty girl of whom he deprived you the other day, namely Briseis of Lanessus, taking an oath that he has had no carnal knowledge of her.
Has he not? Hmm?
All goods and prisoners will be delivered to you at once. And if Zeus grants us the honor of sacking Troy, then you may claim the additional right to select not only a whole shipload of gold and bronze, but the 20 loveliest women found in the city. Queen Helen. Alone accepted. Furthermore, if we come safely back to the rich land of Greece, Agamemnon, our high king, promises he will marry you to whichever of his 3 royal daughters you prefer.
My lord Odysseus, pray waste no more breath in coaxing me to change my mind.
Oh.
I hate a man who conceals his true feelings as I hate the gates of hell. And shall therefore make myself plain. Since Agamemnon never showed the smallest gratitude for the countless feats I performed at his request, neither he nor any Greek alive will persuade me to accept these belated advances.
Achilles, think!
I led no less than 12 successful sea raids on Trojan towns and 11 successful land raids. From every one I brought back a huge haul of booty, which the greedy high king shared amongst his close friends, but he kept most of it to himself, doling out a few treasures only as prizes of honor. Though my fellow princes have kept theirs, Agamemnon chose to rob me, Achilles, of my little slave girl. Briseis is still in his power, and now he can do with her what he pleases. She no longer means anything to me. And since the high king has cheated me of my prize, I have learned to distrust him. And he may as well abandon his attempt at flattery.
The Trojans are over the fosse at the ramparts.
Oh! Hector of Troy has driven you back behind the ramparts, says he. While I still took the field, he never ventured far from his walls. However, having no quarrel with noble Hector, I shall sacrifice to Zeus and his divine family at sunrise tomorrow. And those of you who care may watch my myrmidons pulling lustily at the oars as we sail off across the Hellespont.
Is the royal indemnity not enough? Oh, you're a hard bargainer, Prince Achilles.
Agamemnon sent you here as his delegates because the shameless dog did not dare to meet my eyes. I reject this indemnity and would still reject it though he offered me 10 or 20 times more. I care not a straw for the high king. Tell him that I would scorn to marry a daughter of his, even if she rivaled Aphrodite the Golden in beauty and Athena the Owl-Eyed in skill. And you may as well advise him to raise the siege.
Never in this sense, yeah.
Troy will never fall. All the world can see that Zeus protects those lofty walls.
nor do their defenders lack courage.
Oh, what a merciless fellow you are, Achilles. Any other man accepts blood money even for the loss of a brother or a son. You alone are different, it seems.
No insults.
The gods have planted in you a proud and implacable grudge, and all because of a girl captive. Now the High King offers you 7 others as well. The loveliest and most skilled in his possession. And further gifts of fabulous value. Why then deny us the courtesy due from a host to his guests? We came not only as the council's delegates, but as your brothers in arms. It hurts us to find ourselves received like strangers.
Noble Odysseus, you cannot make me relent. I am determined to take no further part in the war. Unless Prince Hector should attack these ships of mine. However, I believe he will keep his distance, eager for battle though he may be. Good night, my lords. And good fortune.
When battle was resumed next morning, King Agamemnon determined to prove himself Achilles' equal. And well enough he fought, butchering a dozen Trojans as he headed the advance, urging his comrades on. Men-at-arms speared men-at-arms, and chariot fighters chariot fighters, in a dense cloud of dust raised by their horses' hooves. A fire has seized the forest. Flames from the brushwood start. They strike the leafy thickets and tear them wide apart. Winds whirl along destruction, a hissing fiery wall against the forest giants that catch and blaze and fall. So also many proud Trojan noblemen fell before the High King's red-hot progress, and their empty chariots went careering over the battlefield. Agamemnon was already approaching the sheer walls of Troy when Zeus strode purposefully down from Olympus and seated himself on a spur of well-watered Mount Ida. Again, he summoned golden-winged Iris.
Iris, messenger of the gods, command Prince Hector to rally and encourage his troops. But wait in patience until Agamemnon is wounded and quits the field. I shall then let him drive the Greeks right back to their starting point and kill them without pause until nightfall.
Hector did as Zeus ordered, and presently a Trojan spear point pinked Agamemnon's shield arm near the elbow. He shuddered, but continued to ply spear and sword busily. Soon, however, the wound grew painful, and he began to moan and weep like a woman in travail. Then he remounted his chariot and headed despondently for the camp.
The High King Agamemnon has left the field at last, and Zeus, son of Cronus, promises me, Hector, your commander, undying fame. Now show your mettle. Fight like heroes. Prepare for a chariot charge. On to victory!
Then Hector outdid Agamemnon in slaughter many times over. But Odysseus and Diomedes counterattacked and gave their comrades a brief breathing space, as when a couple of wild boars break back undauntedly to charge the yelping pack. But while Diomedes knelt to despoil a Trojan nobleman whom he had killed, Prince Paris of Troy, hidden behind a pillar that marked an ancient tomb, fitted an arrow to his bowstring and took aim. The barbed head transfixed the sole of Diomedes' right foot and pinned him to the ground.
Ha! A hit! But why did you not expose your groin, Diomedes, and let me make it a mortal shot? That would have been a great blessing to my people. You scare them as a lion scares mountain goats.
Oh, you nasty mouth, mean, jeering lady killer, with your little bow and your kiss curl. If we met in single combat using proper weapons, what would your chances be? Oh, this arrow. pinning my foot to the ground, coward. Yet it means less to me than a slap from a woman or a punch from a foolish small boy. When I fight, I fight. Yes, once my spear reaches the man at whom it is hurled, his widow is soon tearing her cheeks and bewailing her fatherless children. And vultures, not women, attend the funeral. Oh, I'm in great pain. Keep guard, Odysseus, while I pull this arrow from my foot. Now, Odysseus, drive me off the field in your chariot.
Thus Diomedes was forced to quit, and so was Odysseus, speared in the leg. It was indeed a flaming battle. Achilles, from the high stern of his ship, watched it roar closer.
Patroclus!
Yes, dear Achilles?
I have seen Agamemnon, Odysseus, and Diomedes retire wounded from battle. Now Nestor has taken another wounded man aboard his chariot. He may have been Machaon of Thessaly. His horses ran too fast for me to be sure, but if it is Machaon, the Greeks can ill afford to lose a surgeon so skilled at extracting arrows and at healing wounds. Patroclus. Soon now the Greeks will be groveling in supplication at my knees. Run to Nestor's hut. Be quick, Patroclus, and bring me news.
Come in. It is you, Prince Patroclus. Welcome. Enter. Pray be seated and drink with my companion and myself.
I fear I cannot spare the time, venerable Nestor. Mm. I have been sent by a man universally feared and honored, Achilles, in fact. He asked me to identify your wounded companion, and since I recognize Machaon the surgeon, I must be off without delay.
Wherefore?
Venerable Nestor, you know of Achilles' quick temper. Unless I return at once, he will grow angry.
Why should Achilles be so anxious for news of the wounded? Is he waiting for the fleet to go up in flames before he will help us? Does his anger exceed his compassion? Here is your drink, my lad. Boiled onion juice, honey, and pearl barley. Most refreshing.
Thank you, venerable Nestor.
I repeat, why is Achilles interested in our losses? Does he still think only of his pride? I fear that he'll repent too late and shed vain tears over our heaped corpses. And yet I believe that if you, dear Patroclus, were to speak seriously to Achilles, he might listen.
If I were to speak, I...
Yes, yes, there's no one like a friend for breaking down a stubborn spirit. And why should he not send you out at the head of his myrmidons and let you borrow his own splendid suit of armor?
Oh, but I...
The Trojans would mistake you for Achilles, and such fresh and vigorous troops as yours should have no trouble in defeating Hector's exhausted army.
Yes, but...
Do I see a gleam in your eye? Are you longing to do battle?
Farewell, venerable Nestor.
Farewell.
I shall keep your words in mind. It may be that they will bear fruit.
By now, the Trojan nobles had dismounted from their chariots and were about to leap into the fosse that protected the Greek ramparts when a terrible portent occurred. They saw an eagle soaring high on their left hand, a large blood-red serpent clutched in his talons. But the serpent was still unsubdued. Writhing, it darted its fangs into the eagle's breast. The bird gave a scream of anguish. Released his prey and sailed off on a current of wind.
The serpent has fallen among us!
A sign from Zeus!
Is it good or evil?
Lord Polydamas, you are a trustworthy augur. Expound.
With Prince Hector's leave.
We have no time to waste on a trifle.
Expound! Expound!
Hector, what we have seen is a manifest warning. An eagle flies high on the left hand, clutching a large, live, blood-red serpent which he releases before the eaglets and his aerae can feed on it. What augur in his senses could misread the divine message? We Trojans are the eagle, they are the serpent. Thus, even if you force the Greeks to retreat behind their rampart, the battle must continue. On reaching the fleet, your troops will be driven off and rolled back across the plain.
What nonsense, Polydorus. You are either joking or else mad. How can you ask me to forget Zeus's promise brought by his own messenger, golden-winged Iris, and confirmed with his divine nod? Instead, I'm expected to study the habits of carrion birds, am I? Well, they mean nothing to me, whether they fly east towards the dawn or west towards mist and darkness. I would rather trust the nod of Almighty Zeus, the king both of gods and men. A divine message. The best divine message is defend your country.
But, my lord Hector...
Are you scared, Polydamas? One thing stands to reason. That though all the rest of us die among the enemy ships, you at least have no need of fear. Cowards always elude danger. Yet dare to hang back from this assault, or to talk your comrades over, and I will use my spear on you. Into the fosse, Trojans, and over that rampart!
Trojans scaled the rampart, pulled down the parapet, and fought hand to hand against the Greek defenders at the turrets crowning it. A desperate struggle which recalled stubborn peasants disputing the ownership of village allotments. The field's not broad, but we contend. How much is his or mine? Says he, your frontier, greedy friend, runs here along this line. So I have brought a measuring rod and grudge him every inch, scoring my own line in the sod. I'll fight him at a pinch. Here, the disputed frontier lay between opposing parapets of shields, and spears took the place of measuring rods. Rampart and turrets dripped blood, yet neither side could dislodge the other.
Spins all day, her children being small. A pound of yarn their food will pay. She rolls it in a ball and lifts the balance with dismay if either pan should fall.
The fortunes of war remained no less delicately poised than that poor widow's scales, until Hector and his company forced their way over the bridge of a sally port. Comrades scaled the parapet and swarmed into the turrets. Hector grasped a huge, rough boulder that lay near the gateway. It was so enormous that the two strongest men living today could only just heave it from the ground. But the spirit of Zeus had come upon Hector. He lifted the boulder as easily as a shepherd would a sheepskin and ran towards the gates, which were tall, massive, and reinforced by crossbars bolted together. Planting himself a short distance away, advancing one foot in order to assist his cast, and aiming at the very center of the barrier, Hector let fly. With a deafening crash, the crossbars flew in pieces and the gates burst open. Hector's armor glinted, his eyes blazed, yet he looked grimmer than sudden night. No man alive could resist him now. It would need a god for that.
Follow me, Trojans! Follow me! Burn the enemy fleet!
My lord king, my voice wearies. Another night I will sing more sweetly. Go to bed, dear muse. Take your rest. And good night to you all.
That was part two of The Anger of Achilles, an epic for radio by Robert Graves, from his translation of Homer's Iliad. Agamemnon was played by Morris Denham, Achilles by Robert Hardy, Odysseus by John Slater, Nestor by Norman Shelley, Hector by Gabriel Wolfe, Paris by Trader Faulkner, and Helen by Jane Wenham. Phemius, son of Homer, a bard, was spoken and sung by Dennis Quilly. The music was specially composed by Roberto Gerard, and production for the BBC was by Raymond Rakes.